This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
It's been nearly 3 years since Lehman Brothers collapsed.
Some say we're on the verge of a repeat in Greece.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Hello, I'm Steve Chiotakis.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson. It's the Marketplace Midday Update, our podcast from Marketplace.org. Today is Monday, September 12th.
Coming up, President Obama makes official his near $500 billion plan to create jobs.
The British are exporting a heck of a lot more scotch to the rest of the world.
And thankfully, Jeremy, thankfully, the mystery of the floating donuts has been solved at Newton Lake.
That's good, because I didn't even know.
I know you were curious.
Yes, I'm interested in this story. Anything that involves donuts, I want to hear about. All that ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
Wake up to the day's top business headlines. Subscribe to the Marketplace Morning Report podcast. It's on iTunes and marketplace.org/podcasts.
Taxi drivers and tax assessors are off the job today in Greece. They are angry, like most Greeks are, about property tax hikes they say hurt the most vulnerable. But the hike in taxes is one part of measures aimed at raising money and preventing that country from defaulting on its debt. The unrest and uncertainty are driving fears that the European debt crisis is going to spread. Jane Foley is senior currency strategist at Rabobank International. She's with us now from London. Hi, Jane.
Hi there.
We've known about the problems in Greece for a long, long time now. Why does now seem like a turning point for the health of the country?
Well, it's really intensified over in the Eurozone. Not only is the ECB, the European Central Bank, being drawn into the crisis because we've had a resignation by their chief economist, and that was, we think, because he disagreed with them buying Eurozone distressed debt. Now, without that, the whole crisis could really accentuate very, very fast indeed. But not only that, there is speculation now that Greece could be on the brink of defaulting. We've known that for a while, but Germany, perhaps, is preparing for such an event. Now, that's unofficial, but that's what the market's fearing right now.
Is the global economy ready, Jane, for a Greek default?
Absolutely not. I think we've drawn from the experience of Lehman that we really don't know how far the tentacles of such a default could really be pushed. For instance, we don't necessarily know who owns what. Where are all of these liabilities? Now, people have been trying to work this out for quite a while, and certainly lots of banks have tried to protect themselves over the last few months against such an event. But there is a strong risk that in the banking sector, liquidity could dry up in the way that it did after Lehman, and that could be a negative impact on the global economy.
All right, Jane Foley, senior currency strategist at Rabobank in London. Jane, thank you.
Thank you.
Let's get another take on the Greek and European debt crisis now. Our regular Monday guest is Julia Coronado. She's chief economist with the investment bank BNP Paribas, and she is with us this morning from London. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, Julia, what are the chances, do you think, of a Greek default?
Well, we have to ask what that means. There's any number of forms that could take, but the bottom line is there's a growing realization that the numbers don't really add up for Greece, and sooner or later there has to be some kind of a restructuring of their obligations.
And do you think that this talk about Greece leaving the Eurozone potentially is for real, and what would that mean?
You know, we have no blueprint for a country leaving the euro, so we don't know exactly what that would look like. It would no doubt be a fairly drawn-out process, but I think what's happening is that there's been a real cat-and-mouse game between the countries providing the funding and Greece, and Greece just doesn't want to meet the demands of fiscal austerity, and these countries are getting sort of tired of dealing with this and are sort of threatening to throw Greece out of the Eurozone. So is it possible? It's possible. It's not in anybody's best interest, certainly not Greece's. They desperately need the aid.
Now, Julia, I've seen people comparing the situation this morning to the collapse of Lehman Brothers 3 years ago. And let's not forget, we've got our own problems in the U.S. banking system, specifically with Bank of America. The CEO is addressing investors right now to try to calm their nerves about the health of that bank. Is the global financial system in trouble?
You know, there's a lot more liquidity in the system now than there was in 2008, and certainly policymakers have more tools at their fingertips to address liquidity problems should they arise. But that said, I certainly don't want to downplay the worries that are taking hold here. Ultimately, this is a crisis of confidence, and no modern economy, no financial system can function without confidence in the system.
Julia Coronado, chief economist with the investment bank BNP Paribas, thanks as always.
It's my pleasure.
Well, the uncertainty is not just limited to the markets, though. It's also affecting the broader economy here in the U.S. And from Washington, here's Marketplace's David Gura with that.
The watchword in Europe continues to be contagion, the fear that the economic problems that plague Greece and a few other countries could spread across the continent. Megan Green is with the Economist Intelligence Unit in London.
If the Eurozone were to pull apart, then that would certainly affect the U.S. as well.
Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner and the Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke have been paying close attention to how this could affect financial institutions here in the U.S. And that's because the European debt crisis could affect more than the markets. Timo Klein is a Berlin-based economist with IHS Global Insight.
The risks are that there may be some further dampening effects on hiring.
Many U.S. funds are exposed to Greek debt, and economist Megan Green says that's prompted firms to take a close look at their balance sheets.
As banks are retrenching and are worried about recapitalizing and aren't investing, that will certainly affect job markets everywhere.
Including the U.S., where there's already no shortage of economic uncertainty. In Washington, I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
We got word this morning that McGraw-Hill is splitting into two companies. One is going to focus on global markets, the other on education.
Is one going to be called McGraw and the other Hill, Steve?
I don't know.
I think that could be a way if you're splitting those into. Anyway,
yeah.
They can take my ideas for free if they want.
Yeah.
That's about how much they're worth,
I might add, my friend.
You can follow us on Twitter at Marketplace Radio, or you can follow us individually on Twitter. I am at Jeremy Hobson.
And I am at Radio Chio.
Get Marketplace's top headlines, podcasts, and special features delivered right to your inbox each day. Subscribe to the Midday Update newsletter at marketplace.org.
President Obama officially sends his $450 billion jobs plan to Capitol Hill today, and he's going to be traveling around the country this week, putting pressure on Congress to pass it. We're going to talk about the big picture now with a guy who won a Nobel Prize last year for research on the job market. Peter Diamond is an economist at MIT. He's with us now from Lexington, Massachusetts. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, when you look at what we're in right now, do you have comfort in the fact that perhaps we've been in a situation like this before, or do you feel like this is so new it's very different than anything we've been in before?
It's certainly very different from what we've seen since World War II. This is different because we have had both the housing bubble and bursts, and we've had a banking crisis so that a lot of the banks are weak. These are phenomena that we have not seen on this scale since the 30s, and also we're now facing the question of whether the sovereign default risk from Europe will impact us both through exports going down and from some possible impacts on asset values for the financial system.
Well, you mentioned housing. I mean, can we get out of this, whatever it is that we're in, without fixing the housing market?
Eventually, yes, but it would be much better to do it more quickly. And the important thing to do it more quickly is to renegotiate a lot of mortgages. Let's start with small businesses. Where does a lot of the wealth of the kind of people who start small businesses lie? In their houses. So right now, with a house underwater, it's not going to grow out for a long time. And so the ability of small business to start up new things and expand is highly limited.
If people are listening to this interview, is there any reason that they should think that we are going to be okay, that we'll get out of this in the next couple of years and be fine?
I have no doubt sooner or later we'll get out of it. The real question is the distinction between sooner or later. What I worry about is whether Congress will, in a bipartisan way, take things that neither party necessarily favors so we get a good compromise and move forward, or whether we get more stalemate. Stalemate hurts the economy in multiple ways, that we don't get the legislation, and that people get increasingly concerned about a dysfunctional government.
Nobel Prize winning economist Peter Diamond from MIT, thank you so much for joining us.
Happy to have had the chance.
Well, part of that job creation plan the president is sending to Congress today is based on a training program started 8 years ago in Georgia. It's called the Georgia Works Program, as Marketplace's John Dimsdale reports.
The Georgia Works Program pays the unemployed a small stipend to train with potential employers. Former Georgia Labor Commissioner Michael Thurman started the program. He says most participants are able to land a job within 3 months.
It's obviously been proven to be an incentive for employees to go ahead and make the hiring decision.
But the program has had only a minuscule impact on Georgia's 10.1% unemployment rate. When the program proved too costly, stipends were lowered and training periods were shortened from 8 to 6 weeks. Fewer people signed up. But Thurman says there are other benefits.
About $17 million we project have been saved by employers who were able to train potential employees without making investments of salary and taxes and so forth.
The federal program would include minimum wage guarantees, making it even more costly to run and provoking Republican opposition in Congress. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Well, the pressure is on for the president to create some jobs, just like it's on for the president to cut spending and reduce the debt.
And the fevered pitch, says Fortune magazine's Alan Sloan, is helping the economy tank even more. Morning, Alan.
Good morning, Steve.
So 9+% unemployment, growth that's almost to a crawl, and yet you say economics is not the root of the problem. Why?
Politics are making the economic problems much worse than they have to be. We've got what amounts to economic paralysis in Washington. And as a bonus, this debate in which fanatics on the one hand and incompetents on the other are participating almost got this country to default on its debts, and that whole thing is still destabilizing the world financial system.
All right, but can you really blame politicians completely, Alan? I mean, the crisis came from the mortgage mess and the credit crisis and the banking collapse, all of that, right?
Right, but I'm not blaming politicians for the original problem.
Yeah.
What I'm blaming them for now is the continuing problem, the lack of confidence, and the sense I get for the first time in 40-something years of writing about this stuff that there is not a grown-up in power in Washington. And when stuff hits the fan, which I suspect it will, we're going to have to really hope that someone saves us, because the politicians sure aren't going to do it.
You think it's going to get worse, Alan? I mean, we've got what promises to be a pretty contentious battle for this Republican nomination and the 2012 general election coming up itself. So does it get better or does it get worse?
I think it gets worse until after the election, and maybe after the election, whoever is in power will come to their senses and do the obvious things which have been talked about endlessly and begin to fix this problem. But I really do not look forward to this campaign. I've just resigned the Republican Party. I'm hoping to start the grown-up party. Are you willing? You willing to sign up, Steve? You
I love
be a
being
grown-up?
A grown-up. Grown-ups are great.
So I hear.
Fortune magazine's Alan Sloan. Alan, great to have you back.
My pleasure, Steve.
Well, today is Monday, Steve, but according to a new survey, we should actually call it Moan Day.
Moan Day.
Yes,
nice.
Because apparently we spend on average 34 minutes complaining on Monday mornings compared with just 22 minutes on other days.
We only complain on 22. Wow, that's nice.
Well, so on Mondays, we have specific complaints that are specifically targeted to Mondays, like how much work we have ahead of us, how much email has built up in our email accounts, or how much we already missed the weekend, even though it just ended.
Yeah.
The survey that has come out with this vital Monday morning information comes from the company Flomax Relief.
Isn't that the thing that cuts your hair? I don't know.
No, it does not. That's not what it's about.
I don't even know what that is. Oh, that's actually the Flow B. I'm sorry.
You know, Flomax, I don't know whether they want people to, like, I don't know whether the reason they came out with this survey is because they want people to think that they're more stressed out on Mondays and therefore they need to go buy some Flomax, which if you don't know what that is, you can Google it.
You can Google it. Okay, that's what we'll try and do. Federal Housing Finance Agency says it might expand a program that makes it easier for some people to refinance their home loans. The program hasn't served as many people as it's set out to. From New York, Marketplace's Stacey Vanek Smith has more.
HARP, the Home Affordable Refinance Program, was started back in 2009. Under it, more than 800,000 homeowners have refinanced their mortgage loans and have lowered their monthly payments. That is a far cry from the 5 million homeowners the program was supposed to reach. But that gap isn't a surprise to housing market analyst Keith Gumbinger.
These kind of mass programs that try to address failing borrowers really try to make a one-size-fits-all solution to a problem which isn't a one-size-fits-all problem.
One proposed change would allow more homeowners to apply for the program. It would lift the limit on how far underwater an eligible homeowner could be. Underwater is when someone owes more on their house than their house is worth. Greg McBride of Bankrate.com says he thinks that tweak alone could help.
All of a sudden, you have a lot of people in the hardest-hit markets that now become eligible to refinance at today's lower rates. And if they're able to reduce their monthly payments, that's money that can get pumped back into the economy.
Still, McBride doesn't see the housing market improving anytime soon. He says home prices aren't going to rise until job growth does. In New York, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
Today we found out exports of Scotch whiskey from the UK topped $2.8 billion for the first half of this year, a 22% increase over the same time last year, despite an economy that is, Steve, on the rocks.
Oh, no. Oh, man.
All right, anyway, here's Kate McGuff from London.
Whiskey accounts for a quarter of Britain's food and drink exports, with around 569 million bottles exported in the first 6 months of this year. Paul Walsh is the chief executive of Diageo, a company that makes around a dozen brands of whiskey. He thinks it's the global appeal of whiskey's high-end image that's kept people drinking throughout the financial crisis, not a collective drowning of economic sorrows.
In many markets around the world, Scotch is seen as combining the wonderful attributes of authenticity, heritage, provenance, together with a lifestyle product. It's something people aspire to.
That seems to be the case for Asia and South America. Exports to emerging markets like Taiwan and Brazil were up by more than half over the year. But the biggest market for premium Scotch whiskey is still the US. Shipments have jumped 14% since 2010, despite uncertainty and stalled consumer spending over the same period. A fact the beleaguered UK economy would like to raise a glass to. In London, I'm the BBC's Kate McGough for Marketplace.
And finally, for a couple of years, Jeremy, Newton Lake in suburban Philadelphia. I know you've been there. I know you go to suburban Philadelphia. This is, I think, in...
I do, although I don't think I've ever been to Newton Lake.
Collingswood, anyway. New Jersey.
Okay.
Okay, right outside of Camden. It's been inundated with mystery donuts and bagels. Nobody knew where all this floating food was coming from.
It's in the lake.
The food is in the lake. It's floating. And last week, police caught a man with three trash bags full of old donuts and bagels, dumping them into the lake. Guess where the man worked?
I don't know.
At a Dunkin' Donuts.
Of course, yes.
And guess what he said he was doing?
Feeding the fish.
He was feeding the geese. The geese.
Okay, feeding the geese.
The geese who were probably trying to eat the fish in the lake. But it doesn't explain, his excuse does not explain the hairnets and all the other trash that he was dumping into the lake as well.
Oh, wow. So that's where his story goes a bit off track.
Yeah.
There's a hole in his story, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Just like the donuts.
In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. Enjoy your Monday. Or Monday, as it were. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.